Well, hello, this is Brian Madden, and I'm sitting in Palo Alto, California at the offices of VMware, and I'm sitting with a couple of folks from the ThinStall group of VMware, so I wonder if you two guys would mind introducing yourselves.
This is Ed Albanese, product management for ThinStall.
And this is Jonathan Clark, project lead on ThinStall.
And I believe former CTO of ThinStall before the acquisition, is that right?
That's correct. I started ThinStall myself back in 1998 and have been pursuing it for quite some time, but it's evolved through a couple different changes. We were talking about that before, but it might be interesting just kind of get the...
What motivates one to start an application, isolation technology company, specifically in 1998?
Well, I don't think anyone wakes up, especially in 1998, and says, hey, let's build an application virtualization platform. I think at that time, virtualization was kind of this weird edge case that I think the first version of Workstation came out when that was...
1999.
Yeah, so you've been doing virtualization longer than VMware, is what I'm hearing.
Well, the company was founded in 98 the same year.
Yeah,
First release of Workstation was 99.
There was things like Bosch just coming on the market, open source emulator. And what got me intrigued about application virtualization or virtualization in general were these types of products. And it drove me from having a company prior to that called Crack.com, which was a video game company and based in Austin, Texas, and kind of started our roots from id Software and published through Electronic Arts worldwide. And having a name like Crack.com, you get hundreds of requests through email, even though email was just starting out, for cracks of video games, applications. And as a video game developer, that kind of gets under your skin after a while. You're like, how do we stop these guys? And so you think about copy protection on your products. And so I came across the idea of, what about running parts of your application remotely on a smart card or remote server and using virtualization to do that? So you profile the application and use something like how Bosch would emulate instructions, lower performance characteristics than what we have today, but it was enough to do the job for copy protection purposes. And the hard part is trying to figure out where in the application to pull out code so that you could run it remotely. So it's non-deterministic. It doesn't have the same inputs and outputs that you're capturing.
So you decide you're going to write your own copy protection scheme to prevent these people from emailing you from stealing your own software.
Exactly. And so that's where ThinStall really started out, was how do we create this virtualization system for running an application under an emulator to study where to pull out code, and then encrypting that and running that on a smart card or remote server so that hackers never had access, physical access to that code that was removed. Because as soon as you give people physical access to a client, complete security is never something you can guarantee. So this is one way of getting very good copy protection security. But yeah.
So that makes sense. But that's not ThinStall. So how'd you get from there to where ThinStall is?
Well, it started out needing a way to bind DLL code with an application. So the picture was, take Photoshop, and Adobe would use this product to protect Photoshop, and they didn't want to distribute separate DLL files with their application. For one reason, it's less secure because the hackers can get into the code directly, disassemble it, see what it looks like. And it's just kind of a burden for them to ship around. If you have a single executable product, you don't want to now have a second DLL that you're shipping with. So started looking into, how do you load a DLL yourself? And Windows doesn't have a way to do that. There's no API that you can say, from a memory buffer, load this DLL into the application. And that was the first step into application virtualization, is figuring out how to do that. And I actually found out kind of along the way that's probably the hardest part of the Windows kernel, is loading DLLs. And the complexities are enormous. You've got all sorts of things that happen under different threading conditions when the application is shutting down, starting up, all sorts of DLL dependencies. You've got side-by-side, you've got the import tables and all sorts of different parts of the PE image, thread local storage. It gets really complex. And I'm not really aware of other people who have done that. it's a kind of a new unique way of taking on application virtualization. And once we had the DLL binding, allowing you to load from a package without extracting it to disk, then you can compress it, you can load it off a network share, you can have it come from any data source you want. And then it turns into, now you need a full file system access, because found some DLLs that maybe have CRC checks. When they load up, they open up the file and then they read the contents and they do a checksum. So you can't just do some patches in the DLL. You actually have to, when it opens up the file, you have to give it the real contents of the file. And that turned into registry access. How do you make sure the application can load if it uses an OCX, an ActiveX control, which has DLLs and ActiveX components alongside of it.
And so at this point, are you still thinking copy protection? Or I mean, you're doing all the stuff it turns into, right? So are you selling products yet? Or are you still just kind of like hacking your own copy protection? Or what, you know, what are you doing?
Well, ThinStall first came around as a means of testing this copy protection system, because there's a million vendors out there who offer copy protection. If you search the internet, I'm sure if you type copy protection, you know, 50 people come up on Google AdWords, and so many people have been burned on that in the past, that, you know, everyone promises to have good security and everyone's broken. And it's only the people who haven't been broken, it's just obscurity, not because they're really good. So you gotta really prove yourself in the market to do that. And I thought, well, ThinStall is this cool thing that people might want to use. Why don't I put that out there as a separate product to test the copy protection? So ThinStall version 2 had a method of doing that, where it would actually use the system to remove code and run it remotely on an internet server. And there's all sorts of interesting things that were done to do cache prediction. So if you pull out code and you're running it remotely, you need to know ahead of time what parts of the cache are going to be hit over there, so you don't have round trips going back and forth. And then it would do code tree traversal. So if you're going to execute, you want to execute as far as you can on the remote side, because that adds more complexity that somebody would have to understand on the other side. So short story is that ThinStall was out there with copy protection for years. And it was actually kind of a fun time to see, you know, as a small vendor, you look at your web logs all the time and see who's linking to you on discussion forums. And we were talking about that, you know, BrianMadden.com, you know, if people aren't aware, you know, you can obviously see, you know, what companies are coming from and who's posting where. But you can also see who's linking to you from other parts of the internet. And I was seeing all these hackers out there from, you know, Russian sites, Brazilian sites, and Chinese sites that were all trying to break this copy protection, and they're all pretty upset that they couldn't. So it actually worked pretty well, but I think the challenge at that time, and probably still today, is what about offline? You know, offline applications. And I think that's you know, one of the broader topics of VMware in general, is making sure we have solutions that can address all sorts of needs that people have.
So ThinStall, so you've got your ThinStall version 2. How did you make the transition to realize that you could actually start to package applications with this and sort of remove some of the complexities with installing applications and DLL conflicts and, you know, the single executable? You know, how did you get from this sort of, I don't know, ThinStall version 2 into, I guess, being used in this space and being used in the application space?
Well, the first people who bought ThinStall and used it were the ISV customers. And they were software developers who had their own product that they wanted to package up and ship out to random PCs on the internet. And they wanted to make sure that the application ran every time somebody used it, because if it didn't work, it wasn't necessarily a support call. It might have been, but it might be a lost sale. And around that time frame, probably the first big use case was .NET. You know, a lot of people wanted to use .NET for their applications, but it wasn't widely deployed on a lot of PCs. And you still can't count on it on 100% of the PCs you want out there.
So you packaged .NET into your ThinStall package along with the application.
Yeah, and we had some ISVs who had hundreds of thousands of users and millions of downloads. And we got some good statistics back then on, you know, kind of failures and where they occurred on different PCs. And they were telling us that .NET failed on 5% of the PCs, failed to install. So even if you say, I want to install .NET on an end user's PC, it's this complex framework. It uses MSI to install in the background, which is a service. You know, users do all sorts of weird things where they have personal firewalls. They turn off all these services because they think it's slowing down their machine. So it's hard to reliably deliver applications out in the wild. So kind of focused on those ISVs and how do you do that? And I think the ISVs, their interest is in keeping the size down of their package. So compression and keeping the install runtime as small as possible was really important. So we've got the runtime today is still less than 500K that you bind in with your application. Even though it does all these tons of cool things, we've managed to keep it really small.
And so you got this on to ISVs, and they're using that, and then people started using it. I mean, I don't know when I first heard of ThinStall was. It wasn't that long ago, 3-4 years maybe, in Citrix environments, really. And people were using it to isolate the applications in Citrix environments. So I guess, did customers come to you and say, hey, we can use this? I mean, how do you make the transition from, like, an IT guy using this in their company away from an ISV who's using it to package their own application?
Yeah, we've started getting some enterprise customers who wanted to use it, and they were the kind of the packaging guys or the software developer guys. And in both cases, they had problems that they couldn't solve with normal deployments. The software guys within a large organization had these kind of massive rollout schedules. You couldn't get anything onto the desktop until it went through this kind of staging desktop where they did regression testing against the app and other things. And the software developers needed to turn around apps really quickly because the end users were using it, they had feedback, they needed to fix bugs and get it back onto the desktops. So they started using it to publish their own internal develop apps to people within the organization. And they didn't have to go get IT approval throughout the company because...
You kind of sneak them on down to
it's
desktops.
It's all user mode, there's no device drivers, and you know, it's security-wise, it doesn't allow the application to do anything that a lockdown user wouldn't normally do. And the IT guys actually loved it as well because they're like, oh, well, we can publish the version of .NET or the Java framework or whatever that we need on all of our systems and then use this for these kind of edge cases to get various apps that might conflict with the base desktop image.
And so from there, I guess it's not a far leap to say, hey, we can... You know, we use it for our own applications, and then we can use it for other applications that, you know, our MSI installer and internally is not working, so let's just repackage their application using ThinStall and deploy it to our own users that way.
Exactly. And so then we set our vision on let's see if we can get this working with every application out there. And
start small.
Well, you start with .NET, and .NET is pretty complex. It pushes a lot of things that, you know, most Windows applications don't, because it's written by Microsoft and it's meant to be a core component by some of their best guys who know APIs that are very obscure and you'd never run across them otherwise.
So you got it to where you could start packaging these applications, and I guess at some point you kind of hit a critical mass, right, where people started using it in desktop environments and maybe Citrix environments, and it just kind of becomes more and more, and then you sort of realize, what, there's other tools, Citrix has streaming and there's SoftGrid and everything, and all of a sudden, oh look, you're right up there with these companies, right?
Exactly. We came from kind of a different direction going to the ISVs first. I think that really helped us because we were a self-funded company and we had revenue coming in. But it also helped us from kind of a scalability point standpoint. We had people with hundreds of thousands or even millions of desktops that they were pushing this out to. And you really get to see all sorts of weird issues that come across.
You're doing your thing and ThinStall's humming along nicely, and then you get a phone call from Palo Alto or what?
Bad phone, picked it up right next to his desk.
Yeah, so the phone to Microsoft, the phone to VMware, the phone to Citrix, and the VMware phone rang first, and all of a sudden you're working for VMware, right?
Well, let's fast forward to that point, yeah. I mean, Jonathan and I, and we've met a few times early on. We're still in version 2, so we kept in touch, and we liked the product, and at a certain point in time, and we both agreed that the right platform to really get ThinStall out there is with VMware. We shared a common vision, what we want to do to transform the desktop and virtualize the desktop's and applications, and so it's been a great fit.
Well, let's talk about that, because VMware, I think, is really associated in people's minds with virtualizing hardware and virtualizing desktops, virtualizing servers, that kind of stuff. Clearly, ThinStall is about virtualizing applications, so how does sort of the application focus of ThinStall fit within the sort of VMware world vision of everything running in a VM? I don't know if I'm articulating that world vision right, but you know, it's application focus. So how does ThinStall kind of fit into what VMware is doing?
A simple way to view that, there's, you know, probably a long answer and a short answer, but the short answer is you want to be dynamic with your IT infrastructure. You've got your machines, you've got your apps, you've got your user data, and you've got your app data. And there are kind of four core components that everyone has to manage. And VMware is the best way to manage your virtual machines and separate out your OS from your hardware. And AppVert is really the best way to separate out your apps from your machines. And AppVert also helps with separating out app data and user data from the application and the OS. And so you can imagine that kind of the filling out that spectrum of how you make everything dynamic and provision the machine from one place, deliver the app from another place, deliver the user data from another place, that there's a lot of places that you can take this that are interesting, both in the data center side of things and in the offline unmanaged and managed environments.
Let's talk about that, the offline unmanaged managed environments. And I guess to begin that, let's kind of take a step back, because probably a lot of people listening are not familiar with ThinStall. I mean, maybe they've heard of it. It's, you know, quote, like SoftGrid or like application streaming or like Altiris SVS, you know, not semantic. So take us through ThinStall. So I have an application. Let's use, I don't know, Adobe Acrobat. And I want to ThinStallify. What do you call it? ThinStall? I don't know. I want to ThinStallify this application. So what happens?
If you want to ThinStall an application, we kind of use it as a verb. The process is quite simple. You start with a clean image, and we do a snapshot technology on a file system registry basis. So we compare before and after you install the application. And that diff is basically your ThinStall package. We produce an EXE, which contains all those deltas. And we include the ThinStall runtime, plus the application icon. And we can do things like if you have a suite of applications, you have Word, PowerPoint, Outlook, then you can have a sort of primary data container and then multiple shortcut executables that reference some entry point with inside that data container.
And now talk to me, you talk about the runtime. So you're talking about, and I guess that this is one of the keys, is ThinStall runtime is what? The client software for ThinStall is in this executable.
Exactly, yep. So people don't have to pre-distribute anything. It starts up in milliseconds on a fresh PC and runs with no installation of any components. It doesn't have any dependencies on anything else on the system. And we support all the way from NT4 all the way up to Server 2008, you know, 64-bit edition. And one of the nice things about kind of the architecture is that because it's all at in user mode, you can run it on top of other virtualization solutions like Wine or Crossover on Mac. So you can imagine some of the, you know, areas that we could get into using this style of application virtualization.
Areas that are not involving Windows. Okay, you didn't say it. So I've got this Acrobat package, right? So I've got my sort of native machine. I snapshot, install Acrobat snapshot again. It builds an executable that has the runtime and all that stuff. And so now I've got this thing called Acrobat.exe or whatever, but I just click it and it runs and it has all the DLLs and all that stuff built into that executable, right?
Exactly. And the guys in the kind of packaging space are pretty familiar with that process. A number of other people do something very similar, but they're building MSI packages, and we're building an EXE. That's our package format.
So they're building, instead of building a package to install the application, you're building the package to run the application.
Exactly. And what happens at runtime when you launch one of these applications is the ThinStall runtime gets loaded into memory by Windows. And that's when Windows looks at one of these EXEs, that's all it sees is that 400K runtime. And so if you have a 2 gigabyte package and it's sitting on a network share and you double click it, it's going to load 400K onto the client PC.
And so 2 gigabyte package could be like Office 2007 Ultimate whatever called office.exe.
Exactly.
Click, click.
Exactly.
And then it loads.
And some of the things that we learned from previous revisions of ThinStall is how do you get that startup time really fast? Because ISVs and end users within the corporate environment really care about speed. Both, you know, how fast does it stream from network share, and how much overhead do you have in terms of startup time if you have to sit around and wait 5 seconds or even 2 seconds, it's too long for a user to wait for an application to start loading. So part of how do you move an application around from PC to PC is the file system level. Like if you take a package and try to run it on Windows 2000 versus Windows XP, there's some fundamental changes in the file system structure, even if you just use the standard install, that cause it not to work. Macromedia Flash, for example, installs to C Windows System 32 Macromed Flash, but it calls get Windows system root to get Windows directory to get the location where it's installed. And then it has registry pointers that point to that location as well. So it's accessing where those DLLs should be located through various different mechanisms. And you try to move that package to another PC where the C Windows is now CWinNT, or you know Vista has different paths as well, then you have issues where it doesn't work, the registry doesn't match with the file system. What you could do is you could go through the package and you could try to convert all the paths and say, well, if it points to, if, go through all the registry data and change the path where it points to, change the file system. But that's expensive to do on startup. So we do that all dynamically at runtime. When an application's running, the file system gets mapped into memory. The registry gets mapped into memory. And it doesn't get loaded, it's mapped, so you've got page backing support from the operating system, and that's how it can do it in a few milliseconds. As it accesses these locations, both through the registry, we'll expand variable formats back into what the application would expect for that OS. And when it writes to the registry, you actually scan it and convert it back the other way. So it's allowing you to kind of move it from OS to OS.
Now that, so that I've got this package, I can, it's all self-contained, executable, starts up at milliseconds, I can run it anywhere. You mentioned online, offline. So online, I guess, would be what, if the package is sitting across a network share and I just double-click this executable and it starts running. Offline, what, same story, I email the executable to someone or USB stick, whatever, right?
Precisely. The barriers to adoption are basically zero, because you can take these executable files and if you want to do streaming, you put it on a network share and it streams from there. We don't cache it to the local PC. We found that it's fast enough for most applications to run directly from the network share using this block-by-block streaming. When an application queries part of the file, it reads it on a block basis, compressed from the network, and then decompresses it on the client. So you're sending over half the data on average. And then if you want to go offline, you just take that executable, copy it onto your desktop, and you're offline. That's all there is to it. When we started looking at these kind of big, massive enterprise environments, they were distributed all over the world. They had sites in lots of different countries, branch offices, and they had ESD tools that they wanted to use to push out these applications. Kind of in the background, they wanted to either trickle the applications down when the bandwidth was available. It's a huge undertaking to deploy those applications. So we added an MSI wrapper around the EXEs as another way of delivering
them. Just like as an option.
And when you run that MSI, it just extracts the EXE and runs a utility we have called ThinReg, which writes start menu shortcuts and file type associations. So when you double click on a .doc file, it knows, okay, here's where Office is.
And file type associations work exactly the same way with the package executable versus just the regular traditional install, right?
Exactly. And the end user doesn't know the difference. And the documents just get loaded with a virtualized application, which could also be kind of one of the directions for VDI and how this fits in there is that you can provision a desktop dynamically and have the applications be located external to that machine. So now you've just saved all the disk space for those applications. And because we don't need to cache it onto that PC, there's a big amount of disk saving storage that you can get from that. And you have fast, reliable local access, no problem with that. And another component of that is being able to sandbox the changes that the application made off to another share so that you can have the user's data be persistent even if you blow away that machine image and reblast it back.
Project Northstar was released last week. It's a public beta, and that's the next version of Thinstall, right? So what is Northstar?
Project North Star Beta 2 was just released last week, which on a podcast may not be relevant, but...
Right, last week, 1946.
And it has a couple of new things. It has... we're getting ready for VMware branding, so fitting in with the kind of VMware IT system, VMware web store, the serial number system, back-end support. VMware is going to offer, you know, great support for the product, you know, getting people trained on how to support it. And it includes new technology features, two of which are pretty interesting, I think. One is called Application Link, which lets you dynamically load layers within sort of a namespace. So if you think of how Terminal Server creates a namespace for an end user in terms of you know, shared memory objects or pipes and things like that, we're kind of doing the same thing, but provisioning a level closer to where you can have multiple namespaces within a single user logon session.
So what you said to me makes no sense at all. So let me ask this, because I'm not a developer, okay?
Okay.
So Terminal Server namespace, I don't know what that means.
Well, you have, with application conflicts, it's all boiling down to where do you want to draw a line of separation? Where do you want things to see each other and not see each other? And you can do it at a VM level, and you've got, you know, complete separation. You can do it at a Terminal Server level, and then you maybe have that share the same file system. You share the same global registry, but you have separate user registries. And then application virtualization with isolation capabilities takes it a bit further, where we separate out, you know, HK local machine, separate out COM objects that might be used by conflicting applications, pipes, and other things that applications might share in the file system as well.
And so we're talking about this application linking now. So what that means, because I guess, you know, a big component of ThinStall is that it has this isolation. So these packages with the ThinStall runtime built in them, they have, would you call it a virtualized file system, or is it just isolate? I don't know the right term, but...
Exactly. It's a virtualized file system. But what we found is we created these isolated containers, and people said, well, we love isolation, but we don't want to fully isolate the application. We don't want to have to package up Office with plugins together because we have different user communities. This community needs this set of Office plugins, and this user community needs this set of Office plugins. And I want to go and repackage Office to include this plugin or that plugin.
Because the plugin ordinarily wouldn't see it, right? So if you have Office inside of one package, and you can't put the plugin in a different package because they're both sort of isolated and virtualized in their own way. So the only way to provide Office with different plugins is what have just completely separate packages that have completely separate versions of Office inside them, right?
Right. And another case would be if you package up Firefox and you wanted to virtualize Firefox and maybe Adobe Reader, you go to a website where there's a PDF file. Firefox could, in the previous way, open it up as a separate document with file type association. It'll know to load Adobe Reader. But with this application link feature, we're able to combine any arbitrary number of packages at runtime very quickly. There's no file copies or expensive operation to do this application link, so we can do it at startup. And so you can say, I want Office with these set of plugins, and it's as if we copied all the contents from that second package or third or fourth, fifth package back into the original application, and you'd package them together. But
so
it's
is it like a dependence, is it like a linkage where then I say within one package, I want this package to see that package's contents?
The default model is to have, say, a plugins directory underneath the application, and you can load anything in that plugins directory. Then you deploy the application later on if you want to just drop various things into that plugins directory. But it's flexible enough that you can have that path located via environment variables or however you want it to find other plugins on the system or on a network share.
So you can have a whole folder almost of potential plugins, and then whatever sort of as needed, it'll grab what it needs.
Exactly.
So that's one new feature of North Star. You said there's another one.
The other one is called Application Sync, and that lets you update applications from a web server. And when we went out and talked to customers about deploying on USB keys or unmanaged devices, they asked us, how do we patch those applications? Because they're not on our ESD system. You know, these are unmanaged machines. So we needed a way to update those applications, and this addresses that issue, where when the application starts up, in the background, it does a check to a normal HTTP web server and checks to see if there's any differences between itself and the server. And that's a very fast query. And if the server's not available, no problem, keep on running. If there are updates, it actually is intelligent enough to do a block level update from the HTTP web server. So it knows to fetch parts of the file from the HTTP web server. And this is kind of playing into how ThinStall works in general, that no new infrastructure, we're just using the servers you already have already.
So it's not a ThinStall web server, it's just a IIS, Apache, you don't care. It's just an HTTP server.
We don't care. And you know, anything you use to accelerate or load balance or distribute that, you know, works instantly out of the box. So it's a great way. And everybody has a web server somewhere that they can drop some data onto if they need to.
So, and really, and that's built into the package. So when I build the package and I say, here's my Acrobat package, I can specify that time, here's the URL where this package is going to live?
Exactly, yep.
And then I deploy the package and it checks, and if I need to make, there's a hotfix to reader, then I just put the new package out there and the few bits that change come on down to the client when it starts up.
Precisely. And there's also a way to enforce updates on the client as well, because you may give it to a contractor and you want to expire it at a certain date, and maybe he left the company earlier, so you want to update that package sooner. We find that people are kind of expiring packages a number of different ways. One is, if you're on an Active Directory domain, then you just use Active Directory to take people in and out of groups, and the package is bound to a specific group. If you're not part of it, you can't run the application. But then you have all sorts of edge cases where AD may not be available and you want to check some specific characteristics of the machine. We have VB script support into the applications as well. So this single exe file, when it starts up, you run a VB script, which is, you know, also running in milliseconds, so it's not noticeable to the user. And it's not extracted out to the hard drive, so it's
running
from within the package, so it's hard to modify or tamper with. And you can do any kind of arbitrary check you want to see if the user is allowed to use it or not. And now with Application Sync, you could go back and update that later on if you decide, well, there's kind of a loophole in how I was doing it before. And Application Sync enforces that you have to check for updates within a certain period of time, or you can't use the package anymore.
And when you do update that, since it's block-level updates, you just drop the new package on whatever web server you have, even your one-on-one free hosting account, whatever, and it downloads those blocks, has a new script, and off it goes.
Exactly. And even if the user is on a lockdown desktop, it's smart enough to, because one issue, if you're updating an application, C program files might not be readable on a lockdown desktop, and the application might be there, and you want to update it anyway. Well, we can write those changes to the user's profile, and then when the application starts up, merge those changes with the previously deployed application and run it without any admin rights. And if you want to roll back that change that you just did, you delete the sandbox and the application goes back to the normal version. Or you change it on the web server, so instead of pointing to version 2, you go back to 1. So if you need to roll it back, very simple way to do that.
Well, it's very cool stuff, and sounds very simple. I like the agentless or embedded agent, let's call it. It's definitely cool stuff. Last question I have for you is, how do you like Palo Alto?
My time here at VMware has been really exciting. Since the acquisition, we're building up a lot of people, and we're trying to make room for our team as well as the desktop team at VMware, which is growing very quickly. And so we're moving over to a very famous site, Xerox PARC, and it's right across the street from here.
Great, so the graphical interface, the mouse, and the ThinStall package, all from the same spot. All right, Jonathan, well, I certainly appreciate you taking the time, and look forward to talking to you in the future.
Thanks for having me.